9 a.m. on December 5th, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on BusinessRadioX.com, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com. I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm Dana Barrett. And don't you love when we listen to our own programming before we go live and then talk about it as the music's going? I love it.
You got great music.
Yeah, it's very cheerful morning music. We like that.
And it is a cheerful and delightfully warm morning.
I know.
Here in the ATL.
Is it global warming?
Month of Christmas. How could it be?
It doesn't exist.
Should we
be?
That's true.
I am loving this weather.
I know. It is really nice. I mean, you know, when you have a slightly warm spell in other cities, it's still not like this, you know. In the Northeast, they're like, oh, it's nice out. It's 45. I'm like, yeah, that's not the same as here.
Ain't got nothing on Atlanta.
That's right. Well,
Hotlanta.
That's right. And speaking of Hotlanta, people don't call it that anymore, do they?
Not at all.
No. It's dorky, right? Are we dorks?
Just a little bit.
Are we showing our age?
Kind of.
A little bit. Okay. Well, whispering into the mic over there
moving
today.
Moving on to cooler things.
That's right. Much cooler things. Our guest today is Operation Hope Atlanta CEO James Bailey, better known as Jay. Welcome officially to the show, sir.
Oh, so good to be here. Good morning, all.
We are going to do our best to move this show along, which is something we're not very good at. We normally piddle around and, you know, we waste time, but we want to get our guest in and out because he's got lots of business to attend to. So we're going to hit the news headlines a little bit later in the show, but we're going to start with Operation Hope. So for the listeners who haven't heard of Operation Hope, let's go way back and just kind of give us the primer.
Way back. Well, Operation Hope celebrates 20 years this year. So this was the big celebration. I'm sure we'll talk about our Global Economic Summit. But 20 years ago in South Central Los Angeles, John Hope Bryant, our founder and chairman, who lives in Atlanta, who's an Atlantan now, we've claimed him. In the wake of the Rodney King riots, $1 billion worth of damage, less about the verdict and less about not being stakeholders in their own community. How do you turn that around? You start creating stakeholders. You start creating homeowners. You start creating small business projects. You make free enterprise and capitalism work for the poor. So John Bryant got busy at the age of 26, amazingly, started Operation Hope with no budget, no friends, but wanted to make a difference. Fast forward 20 years. We operate in 300 U.S. cities. We have 7 offices in South Africa. We're in Saudi Arabia, Gabon. We have a presence in 52 countries. In the U.S. alone, we've served over 2.4 million families. And have redirected over $1.6 billion to underserved communities.
And so the idea behind it is that you're empowering people to sort of make their own way? Is that kind of what's happening?
Yeah, it's not a handout, but a hand up.
Okay.
So, you know, we're not about just doing workshops for business or small business. We're not just about coming in for an hour and we'll talk about homeownership. The team with Operation Hope is absolutely measured on results. You know, when we look at home ownership, we want to know how many people are now homeowners. When we look at small business, it's not just to teach a cool course. We want to add to GDP growth. We want to look at where my staff is measured on how many jobs have been created, how many small businesses have been started. What's the amount of loans or small business loans that have been approved or submitted and approved? So we're absolutely looking at transforming communities with tangible results that we can measure.
No, I mean, one of the hardest things I think for people in general is doing exactly what you're sort of talking about, bridging that gap between an idea or a dream and reality. So if someone sort of shows up to a workshop or a class, how do they stay connected with you so that you do make sure they get over that bridge?
Oh, absolutely. We don't take it lightly. There's a 13-week course they have to commit to with our small business program. So from anywhere, part of our mission, it's written in our mission, taking small business dreamers and making them small business owners.
I just fed that to you, didn't I?
Indeed, absolutely, right? And it's amazing. Over 13 weeks, this person goes from an idea to a concept to a business plan to an action plan.
Yeah.
And even after the 13 weeks, we have one-on-one counseling for those business owners to help them stand their business up, to stand their dream up, to get their dream funded. So the 13 weeks is an intensive course. But then also we don't leave you after the 13 weeks. There's also support for all business owners post the course. Like I said, we're in the business of creating jobs.
Yeah.
And helping people facilitate those dreams.
Now, when you talk about underserved communities, clarify that. Who qualifies?
Well, everyone qualifies. All of our programs are
so
free
you help
and not
me.
Exclusive, of course. Gladly. We can set up a
lot of help,
Operation
Jay.
Hope office right here at Business Radio X.
Done.
But, you know, you can drive through any neighborhoods. In any neighborhood, you drive down the street where you see a liquor store right next to a check cashing place, where these neighborhoods are typically 470 to 550 credit score communities. We have these communities all over the U.S., all over the world. This is our sweet spot.
Yeah.
You know, if we're looking at no more than a couple of miles right outside of where we are right now, there are extreme pockets of poverty and low income. And predatory companies that prey on those that are financially literacy. They prey on that.
Yeah.
It's not illegal.
Yeah.
It's
just immoral.
It's just an immoral business model, but perfectly legal.
Yeah.
And they're able to do that based on market demand. If we raise the financial acumen of those in those communities, if we raise their credit scores, we empower them financially, we give them the gift of what we call financial dignity, market demand will change those impoverished neighborhoods to emerging neighborhoods based on market demand and the knowledge of its constituents.
Yeah.
Jay, poverty is a much more complex problem
than people
realize, right? So there's a lot of layers here. And what I love about what Operation Hope is doing is you're addressing this on a multi-layered approach and really seem to have a deep understanding of what happens inside that situation that makes it difficult for someone to move out of their current class and advance in society. So what are some of the ways that you're able to really deal with the barriers that keep people in these underprivileged neighborhoods in a state of not having financial literacy or not being able to lift themselves up out?
Well, you know, I think that at our very core, we've moved and we've grown, quite honestly, from a state of financial literacy or even what some people would call financial empowerment to what we call and consider financial dignity. And I think that if you don't address the dignity issues first, you're never really going to be able to deal with the poverty. As you said, poverty is a multi-layered thing that we must look at in with a very diverse lens. And so if you don't peel back that understanding of self-worth, they don't understand who they are and see themselves at the table, there's no way. We could give them $1 million today and it'd be gone in 3 months.
Yeah.
Financial dignity is really the practice of understanding it in the head and the heart and understanding the dignified piece, because everybody wants to be successful and live a dignified life.
The other thing I wonder about is almost the reverse of that. Do you find that there are sometimes people that are sort of too proud to participate in some of the programs because they're like, I don't need a handout. Screw you. I can just do this on my own kind of thing.
Can't call it pride.
Yeah, that's
taboo.
The wrong word.
Yeah, money's taboo and it's usually shame.
Yeah, that's a better
so
word.
So if you're looking at, you know, the funny part is rich, poor, black, white, money's a taboo subject. And 70% of people in foreclosure never call their lender.
Yeah.
So rather than calling the lender and saying, hey, whew, it's tough for me.
Yeah.
And I need some help. The shame of financial illiteracy across the board is crippling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you don't know what you don't know. And so in those spaces like that, this is where what Operation Hope and lots of organizations, but Operation Hope specifically, does a very good job at getting at the core. You know, you walk in with a 380 credit score. We have a laugh about it. But the first thing you see when you walk into our new Hope Center, our Hope Financial Dignity Center at Ebenezer, is a sign that says no loans denied.
Yeah.
As soon as you walk in, you see that sign, instantly your financial dignity is lifted.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're approved on day one.
Yeah, I
subject think, to your denial factors.
I think one of the things that you're right. I mean, I can imagine sort of standing in line when you think anywhere you are, when you're standing in line waiting for something or you're on the phone waiting for something and you're thinking, they're not going to give me this. I'm going to get denied. And that just that sinking feeling in your stomach. So to see a sign like that right away just takes that away, I'm sure. Now you mentioned the new center and I do want to talk about that. I want to talk about the event you just had and all of that. So, let's jump into the present a little bit. Tell us about the event that happened. I think it was just last month, right?
Oh, man, it was amazing. 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, right.
We hosted the World in Atlanta. it exceeded all of my expectations. I think what we accomplished to do was to create a Davos situation for the poor. There's a little town in Switzerland called Davos, Switzerland, where the World Economic Forum meets every year. They get 3,500 to 4,000 the most powerful people in the world to come together and talk about being powerful how to stay powerful and how to make the world more powerful.
Wait a minute. I was not invited to that.
Neither was I.
You know what? We have to talk to somebody.
World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, you know, see if we can get a meeting with them.
Come on.
It's insane.
Next year for sure.
Indeed. We're headed. And so in New York, they have CGI in New York and Chicago, the Clinton Global Initiative that talk about social issues and moving, you know, moving people along the continuum. But there's really no global or national conversation about the poor. You know, how do we solve poverty? How do we bring people to the table to talk about this thing, this multi-layered thing that nobody wants to talk about? It's a taboo subject. Politicians don't say poor or poverty. Run the tape throughout the entire debate series. Nobody says poor or poverty. They'll say middle class, but nobody even touches poor or poverty.
And yet that's one of the biggest problems that the U.S. faces right now.
Absolutely.
As we look towards the future.
So what we were able to accomplish is we were able to bring in over 1,000 delegates from over 30 countries.
Wow.
You know, if we want to talk about local rock stars, this is Bill Rogers, CEO of SunTrust. We had over maybe, I don't know, 5 to 6 Fortune 100 CEOs in place. And certainly anywhere from 12 to 15 Fortune 500 CEOs in place, having conversations about how we move forward together. I think one of the unique things about the summit that made it so very powerful is everybody had a voice. Instead of having your typical summit where there are people on the stage and they talk down to the people, we have this idea that we want everybody to play a part. And so we had working groups. And so you're sitting at a table of 10 to 15 people. There's a moderator. There may be 2 CEOs at your table. There may be a carpenter. There may be a college student. They're all talking about solutions and adding their perspective. We were able to capture all of that energy. We're going to catalog it, and it's going to be presented to the G20 and the President of the United States.
Wow. I got a chill. That's pretty impressive.
Amazing, the level of interest that you've gotten and some of the people that are involved. I mean, you mentioned Bill Rogers from SunTrust, a lot of these like high-level CEO people. And you hear about the growing class divide, you know, and the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. So what is the interest level in the rich, or the CEOs of these top companies in helping to solve this problem and work with you?
You know, let me not sell this short. One of the rock stars of the whole weekend or the whole summit, we got Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke to come down. Big deal.
Huge.
Big deal. We had, you know, CEOs of the largest companies in Saudi Arabia over. So when we talk about their interests, the way that we started the summit was what we called an opportunity bus tour. You know, a lot of times what we may claim as racism or classism is a lot of times it's radical indifference. They just don't know the problem exists, or they don't know the depth of the problem. Bill Rogers even said to me that, Jay, you know, one of the things that shocked my world, he was at a seminar and someone talked about, you know, if the percentage of families, if they had a $2,000 emergency, how many would not be able to respond to it? And it's out of his purview.
Yeah.
Bill's never been declined for a loan.
Right.
Bill's never had to go to Metro PCS to get a cell phone because AT&T wouldn't approve him for a contract.
Right.
So this is something that's foreign to him. So we started the summit with an opportunity bus tour. We put 300 people on buses. You know, on these buses are our city council president, Cesar Mitchell, Dennis Lockhart, Fed president here in Atlanta with the Federal Reserve Bank. These level of people and taking them through neighborhoods and showing them areas of opportunity. And you can't know unless you go. So although the problem exists right outside of our city limits, if you've never been there, you really don't get a full understanding of the need. So that's how we started the summit, very local, and we grew to global. So that opportunity bus tour was exactly what you're talking about, taking the poor to the face of the rich. And saying, hey, here's a problem. What can we do together? And quite honestly, I think that there is a much bigger heart than the media may try to portray for the haves to want to help the have-nots. Because I think that we understand, especially in Atlanta, that this whole thing doesn't work if we don't do it together.
Absolutely. It's in everyone's best interest.
Absolutely.
For sure. So is the summit going to be a regular thing? Was this a one-time deal? Do you have energy to do this again next year? Like, how does this work?
My God, I think part of one of the drawbacks to success is replication. And we are going to attempt, and we're in planning right now, to make this an annual convening our Davos for the poor here in Atlanta. And what better place? One of our mantras, if you go to our website, operationhope.org, is to go from civil rights, C-I-V-I-L, to what we call silver rights. And understanding that economics is the next civil right for the next generation. Understanding the language of money is the next civil rights for the next generation. So with that, what better place to host this summit for the poor, this global financial dignity summit every year, than Atlanta, Georgia?
And part of what I think you, I remember you talking to us before we got on the air, in fact, a couple of weeks ago before the summit, I think, about the new facility. And that was part of what was going to be sort of unveiled and shown during the summit. So tell me about the facility a little bit.
Still in awe of it. Still amazed by it. If anyone were to drive by 101 Jackson Street now, there's a 35,000 square foot building standing right behind Ebenezer Baptist Church. And it's the Martin Luther King Senior Community Complex. And while we're so honored and utterly humbled to be there, we're the first nonprofit in 40 years to be invited on the King campus. And why is that important to be in a center dedicated to Daddy King? Well, the story that's never told about Daddy King, this is Martin Luther King Jr.'s father, of course, is that he understood the language of money. He was an entrepreneur. Quite honestly, he was a capitalist. And he sat on the board of a bank for 40 years and helped co-found Citizens Trust Bank, one of the largest African-American-owned banks in the country. So when we talk about an upper-middle-class black family in those days living on Auburn Avenue, we wonder, you know, how did Martin Luther King travel the world doing the work that he did on very little salary and then sometimes no salary? Well, he had his father at home that understood how free enterprise and capitalism worked. And the story is told that many of the homes that are owned around the Ebenezer Baptist Church area by black families, it's because Daddy King advocated home ownership. When the King Center was built, they didn't have to go for federal approval or go to the city. They owned the land.
Yeah.
So they built what they wanted. So this was absolutely a financially empowered individual. And when Dr. King was assassinated, he was waging the poor people's campaign. The next message was economic parity. And so to be on the King campus, partner with Ebenezer, partner with the King Center, Dr. Bernice King is on my Southeastern board here, doing the work that King would have been doing had he lived. When they ask what's happening in Atlanta to continue the King legacy, we now have an answer in brick and mortar. We're a center that's absolutely trying to move people along the economic continuum, empower them financially, and increase economic parity in communities that need it most. We don't take that lightly at all. I think these type of things happen sometimes by divine intervention. So to be at this center, the Hope Financial Dignity Center at Ebenezer, we think is a tremendous game changer. And it's a local center, but will have much larger global ramifications.
I know we're running a little bit short on time. We promised to get you out of here quickly.
Oh, this is too fun. I can stay around a little bit. I think
we roped you in. We roped you in. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I have a couple of questions that sort of popped into my head as you were talking. One, how does Operation Hope Atlanta sort of work with the national global organization? How does each chapter sort of fit together?
Oh, we're one and the same. We're a tight-knit family. So we're based in L.A. We have 18 individual U.S. offices. L.A. is our headquarters.
Okay.
Our chairman, John Bryan, has now made Atlanta his home. So we're kind of like a subset of L.A., if you'd say it that way. But L.A. is our brain trust. L.A. is our home. L.A. will always be that.
Okay.
And so in that way, you know, we have our headquarters, our center, and it feeds out to all of our feeder offices. In Atlanta, we have what we call a regional office. So right across the street at 191 Peachtree is our corporate office for the Southeast. And it's kind of like a hub and spoke model where everything turns from that office in the Southeast as the same way on the West Coast with LA.
I got you. So do you serve more than the greater Atlanta area then because you're sort of a hub of the Southeast, or how does that work?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, we have plans to move to North Carolina. We have plans to open an office next year in Birmingham, Alabama. We have an office in Miami with a partnership with the city of Miami and the mayor's office in Miami. But then, too, you know, when I talk about that hub and spoke model, the work that we do in the heart of Atlanta, you know, our goal is to make sure that reaches out to the greater Atlanta area and even into rural Georgia, where the need is great and isn't being addressed, quite honestly.
That's very cool.
Now, are there differences in what you see in terms of the demographics and the particular economic conditions in different cities across the country, or is it mostly a parallel type situation? Are there?
Sure. I mean, I think that economic depression, what I may call it, or financial indignity, has a baseline set of things that make it flourish. We address that baseline across the country. And of course, there are nuances from city to city. But one thing we've done a very good job of is growing talent in the city that understands the city. You know, one of our charges for all of our program managers in our city, you're the CEO of your market. Understand your market. Who are the key players that you need to talk to that understand what's going on in your city to help combat the problem? And that's really how we take it city, by using those that are of the city to try to cure the ills of poverty and financial illiteracy and financial indignity within, if it's Chicago, to Harlem, to Anacostia, Virginia, to Oakland, to L.A.
So I assume from sort of the way you discussed the way Operation Hope works that you sort of go into some of these sweet spot neighborhoods that you kind of talked about where the credit scores are low and there are some of those predatory businesses and sort of let people know that you're there and that you have these programs available. But one of the things that I think is sort of happening in our world today in general, not so much, not just as it relates to poverty, but in general, is that our borders are kind of becoming blurrier with, you know, global economics. And, you know, we're now doing business all on our computers across the world. And so it's, you know, kind of a sci-fi vision of, you know, eventually it's going to be, you know, Nike is a country and, you know, Apple is a country. And it's not about where you live anymore. It's about who you work for or whatever. Right. So. So sort of taking that same idea and looking at it as it relates to poverty, the way our economy has been for the last couple of years, there I think are a lot of people who are, you know, and I'm going to do the air quotes, in poverty, quote unquote, who are not in those sweet spot neighborhoods because they were gainfully employed in that middle class, maybe in the middle class or the lower middle class, and they dropped off. You know, and they're still kind of hanging out.
They were climbing up.
They call that the missing class.
Yeah. And so they're sort of hanging out still, maybe hanging on by a thread in that middle class neighborhood, but they really need help. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to sort of find those people who aren't geographically easy to find?
You know, the tough part is it goes back to that comment that I mentioned earlier. And there's a great book about that very phenomenon called the missing class. You know, it's one of the tougher things to uncover. You know, if you live in a poor neighborhood, you're absolutely pinpointed. Wow, that's a poor neighborhood. Let's go in and help.
Yeah.
But there's even more shame. If I was once an attorney and I lived in a $400,000, you know, dollar house, and I no longer can afford my payments and, you know, it's tough to maintain my family. Wow. It's tough for that person to say that I need help.
Yep.
And so that's a challenge to find that person. You know, this is why doing radio shows like this is, you know, important to look at and let people know that there are resources. There are discrete methods to make sure that you get the help that you need. We have a mortgage crisis hotline that I think we've now served over 400,000 people, help them stay in their homes, and it's free of charge. It's a 1-800 number, so you can call from any town, any city in the U.S., and we can help you matriculate that process to stay in your home and find out an option to work through foreclosure. But that's a challenge. That's going to be a challenge always to just let people know. And I think that doing things like this, and thank you guys so much for having us on the show today to talk about what we do.
Yeah.
Because there's help out there. And there's a financially dignified way to find solutions and answers. And we want to make sure that we help all that need it.
Yeah, I think that sort of automatically leads me to another group of people who are, you know, working really hard and they're not officially in poverty, you know, but I know several people who are working two and three jobs. You know, they've got their cousin watching the kids. They can't afford daycare, so their cousin's watching the kids, but they're doing an overnight shift, and then they come home for 3 hours, and then they do, you know what I mean? And they're...
Oh, the working poor.
Yeah, and so they're really keeping it together, but barely. Mm-hmm. Are there programs for those people as well to sort of get out of that level and sort of maybe get to where they could only have two jobs instead of three, or one and a half jobs, or, you know?
You know, one of the beautiful things that we do is it's a credit and money management course where you're given essentially a financial coach. Somebody that can restructure your life, take a look at your budget, see where your spending is, see where the leaks are, patch up the leaks,
yeah.
Talk about a plan moving forward. Because a lot of times as we're spending more money than we should.
Yeah.
And we never really have the time to take a moment and look at our finances,
sure.
And come up with a plan. So Operation Hope has financial counselors that can help people look at a financial plan.
Yeah.
Looking at what's happening here. Because, you know, honestly, I can think of a story of a young lady who was spending more on gas getting from place to place, enough so where she could leave one of her jobs when she restructured her budget and looked at her spending. If she was talking about the extra meals that she was, you know, incurring on the extra job and the extra mileage and the extra time, and never really had the time to sit down and look at her budget and say, these are what my expenses are.
Yeah.
This is what I'm expelling, and this is what it's costing me. Here are the opportunity costs.
Yep.
Let's look at this whole picture and see if there's a way to make it fit in a more efficient way, and I'm able to spend more time with my family. That thing occurs all the time.
Yeah.
And I think we get so caught up in, okay, I got to make it happen, and I got to make the ends meet, that we really never introduce the ends to one another so they can meet.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we wrap up this sort of portion of the show, I want to make sure that we get contact information out. If people want to either contribute to Operation Hope and help you guys out in some way, and also if they need services, where do they go?
Absolutely. They can go to www.operationhope.org. That's our website.
Yep.
Locally, our Southeast Regional Office is 404-941-2919.
Okay. And when they're on the Operation Hope website, they can just find a regional office and find the Atlanta information there as well. Is that how
they
that
can
works?
Find the, or the, you know, if there are listeners in other cities, yep. You know, one of the first prompts on our website is find a Hope City.
Yep.
And you can scroll down and look at the areas where we have offices, and all of our numbers for all of our programs are located on the website.
Yeah. And then also probably you have information about the Global Summit that just happened on the website.
Oh, you know, we do.
Okay. The center.
There's a recap on with photos, and it's a good ride to look through to see who was there. You know, Jim Clifton, CEO of Gallup. And, you know, we had, Steve Bartlett, the CEO of the Financial Services Roundtable. It was really powerful, powerful, powerful day. And the most beautiful piece is there are lots of pictures of these super high-powered, important people standing next to and having conversations with what we would consider your regular, everyday American, and just talking about how we can work together. That was the magic. It was an incredible spirit, an incredible energy the entire day.
It's really awesome. Well, James, you've given me a lot of hope today for what is possible. Absolutely. Because I think, you know, we are facing a lot of very serious challenges right now in this country. And this is exactly the type of initiatives that we need to pull us out of that.
Also, it's so nice to hear a story. You know, because we're business radio, we often talk to a lot of really great people who have amazing success stories where they started out young and they built some, you know, huge organization. But it's really cool to hear about somebody who started out in their 20s and built an organization like this that is all about helping everyone else and giving back. And, you know, that's really powerful and wonderful. So, phone.
Well, actually, you know, one thing, and I'd love to make time for, and I think out of the corner of my eye, I saw one of our success stories who was a college student turned volunteer, turned intern, turned fellow. And there are two things that, you know, when you're talking about someone young starting a business, if we're 20 years old now, 20 years and beyond is all about entrepreneurship and capitalizing on youth economic energy.
Yeah.
Through a program called Hope Business in a Box, and we think it changes everything.
Yeah. And we did see somebody wandering around out there, but I must have made a face like, go away, you don't belong here. I don't know, because whoever it was disappeared. So I don't know. If you want to go out and see if she's still here, you can.
Sure.
I do have a news story that I think you'll like that I want to bring up, because it's a story a little bit about someone sort of spreading the holiday spirit and kind of sharing the love. And it's that This just happened earlier this week, I believe. A guy, a random mystery man, went to a Georgia Power office and ended up paying the bill for a dozen customers that were standing in line.
Oh, wow.
The story is essentially that he had been homeless himself about a year ago and has kind of worked himself out of that place and didn't want to be identified. His name is not in the press, but he was in there just to pay his bill. And he heard someone in line, a couple people in front of him saying, I can't pay the bill. I don't know what to do. I'm short. And so he went up to the register and said, how much do you need? And he covered her. And then he turned around to the line and said, does anybody else need help? And people did. And one woman, in fact, was so far behind that she was going to have the power shut off. He took care of her, and he took care of about between 12 and 15 people and just paid their bills and didn't want anything for it. Didn't want to be identified. I love stories like that, especially this time of year. I mean, you know, because people are so discouraged. I mean, you know, on a side note, I'm not in poverty and I'm not complaining, but my daughter's in college and the bill comes for second semester and it's due December 17th. Are these people just cruel? Don't they understand that it's the holidays and I want to buy a turkey and some presents for little Joe,
right?
You know, I mean,
and
it's
Tiny Tim.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we'll make it work and it's going to be okay. But, you know, when you feel like you're kind of getting screwed from every direction, it's sort of nice to know that there are really just some good souls out there that just want to do something nice for no reason, not because they want their name on a building or they want to be identified. They just, out of the goodness of their heart, know what it's like to stand there and not have.
Absolutely. That's an incredible story. Thanks. I'm glad you just slipped that one in there before I got out of here.
Yeah.
Because it speaks to, I know you asked before about, you know, do people connect and what's the, you know, we have this mantra that, you know, no one starts a cancer foundation without being stung
by
cancer.
Yes.
And, you know, when someone's been through poverty and know what it feels like, I think part of why Operation Hope was started, if you talk to John Bryan and really get past the layers of the elevator pitch, he talks about he started Operation Hope out of guilt because he blamed being, you know, poverty on the poor. And it goes back to that layer that you talked about where, you know, he lived in South Central Los Angeles, didn't have a lot, but he looked at himself as a success story, and I did it, so why can't you do it? Until someone pulled him to the side and said, everybody's not John Bryan. He said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, your parents own the home that they lived in. Your dad has always owned his own business. He may not have made all the money in the world, but he always owned his own business and wore a suit every day. You had the kind of mother that quit her job to go take a job as a janitor at each of the schools that you attended so every day she could spend more time with you. And she told you she loves you every day. So if we talk about these layers of poverty, at the very core of it, you know, it's self-awareness. And if you've got parents that say that they love you every day and that you can do anything that you want to do and give you all of those tools, you're no longer poor at that point. You may be broke, but you're no longer poor.
I love that distinction.
And so like the gentleman that was in line who didn't look at, you know, the individuals as, you know, oh, my God, what's going on? Why didn't you pay your bill? He's been there. He understands the layers. And you know what? I you know, God bless him for it, for saying that, you know what, I just want to give you a hand up. It's the holidays. I know the stress. I've been there before. And this isn't a handout.
Yeah.
This is a hand up. Now go do something good with the money that you'll save that I've taken here.
And not to be totally cliche and silly, but, you know, that whole pay it forward thing. I mean, those people are going to feel that. And when they can do the same thing, you know, in 2 years, they're going to do it because they're going to be like, you know what? This guy did that for me. It made my month. It made my year. You know, it warmed my heart. Now I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Contrary to popular belief, there's a lot more good in the world than evil.
Yeah. We just don't report it.
There you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, at everyone's core, there's good in most people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah. Well, I thought you would like that one.
Oh,
so
yes, it is.
I'll do the rest of my mockery and tomfoolery after you've left.
Gone.
Jay, thank you again so much. And really, we'd love to have you back anytime. If you want to bring in some success stories or, you know, just updates, we'd love to have you. And again, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, sure. And I'd love to let people know that they can get involved. You know, when you talked about something, giving people an opportunity to do well or do well by doing good.
Yeah.
We have over 2,500 active volunteers in Atlanta alone.
Yep.
25,000 plus all over the U.S.
Yep.
People can go in and tell their story. I think one of the ways that we solve the problems in our community is giving our kids something different to see.
Yeah.
Kids want to be dope dealers, athletes, and rap stars because they don't see much else in terms of success.
Right.
They don't know that there's a young woman who, you know, who runs a radio station.
That's right.
and they've never seen you before. You guys don't exist in the community.
I think he just called us young. And I really like that.
Well, you know what?
That was very charitable of you.
It's Christmas time.
So absolutely. There's so many opportunities out there, and it is an awareness. Mm-hmm. And then being able to say, you know, with these skills and a hand up, mm-hmm. I could do that.
Yeah. And I could be you.
I could be exposed to it, yeah.
And so, definitely. You know, we always call out for volunteers to help us spread this mission. Kids absolutely need to know the language of money, understand entrepreneurship and what the future holds, but more than anything else, they need good role models, good people to model themselves after. They take all of this brilliance and say, you know what, I want to become a radio station owner.
Right.
I'd love to come back. There are a couple of initiatives that we have going on that are absolutely phenomenal and exciting. I'd love to bring back some of the voices of success stories.
Absolutely.
People that have gone through our programs and have taken their lives to a different level. And to let people know that it is possible.
Yep.
This is a gift. And you guys are neighbors. I'm right across the street. And I'd love to have you guys over as well.
We'll be over.
Very fun.
Great to see you, Jay.
Thank you so much, guys. Enjoy the rest of your day.
We'll see you real soon.
All right. And we do have a couple more stories while Jay makes his way out of the studio to hit some headlines before we wrap it up for the day. What a great interview, Elizabeth. That was really fun.
Yes, that was.
I could talk to Jay all day, couldn't you?
It's an amazing organization.
I know.
And all that they're doing.
Don't you want to run out and volunteer right now?
Yes, I kind of do.
And so let's go from the empowering and wonderful to the completely ridiculous, because that's how we roll here on Good Morning Atlanta. Did you read about the guy who posted the bogus photo of winning the Powerball?
No, what was that?
I don't know. What is wrong with people? So this guy posts this.
Social media enables the strangest behavior.
You know, I was at an event last night, a wonderful event put on by the Atlanta Press Club. It's their annual holiday author party. And I only bring this up just to say where I was, but I was networking, whatever. And there are strange people in real life, too. You don't need social media to be strange.
Right.
Just saying. But just
walk down the sidewalk.
But when you're strange in a small environment, you know, like here in our little radio station or at a networking event or whatever, you're not impacting the entire, let's say, even world or nation or
right.
Yeah. So this guy posts this photo on Facebook and it's not just like he didn't just post like a photo of himself. He posted a photo of himself with a winning lottery ticket. It's all fake, right?
It's like all doctored, photoshopped up.
Right. So he spends time to do this. This is not like this took
what
some
it would
forethought.
Be like if
right. If I won, here's the winning numbers. And he puts a picture of himself holding the ticket with the winning numbers online. And he says, I just won the Powerball. And if everybody, please forward this photo. And if you all forward it, I will give $1 million to a random person who forwarded this. So this became literally the most shared photo on Facebook. And it was bogus.
Ever.
So people, why are we wasting our time on this CRAP? That's what I want to know. Really? Come on. And you know I'm all about the
people
lottery.
People will do anything for a bogus shot
at $1 million.
$1 million.
I know. It's so sad. When they could just be, working hard and making it happen on their own. Okay, moving on to slightly more serious news, my friend. We like to talk about jobs coming to Atlanta. But this week there is a story about jobs moving away. So I felt that we should report that as well. Lockheed moving 560 jobs from Marietta to Texas in an effort to cut costs. So
yeah, I mean, they've got a big facility there. There's still going to be over
6,400
people
correct.
That work there. It's not like they're closing it down, but they are doing some relocation of some of the stuff.
Yeah, and we've reported stories of 150 jobs coming here, so I felt like 560 leaving was worth a mention. As you said, they're still here. They're not going away. They're just sort of consolidating operations on one particular line of business. So hopefully it's not the forebearer of more cuts to come, but probably worth keeping an eye out just in case.
Yeah, those big defense companies have huge budgets and
but like everybody, yeah, it is. But like everybody right now, you got to be, careful. Everybody's sort of holding their dollars close to the vest and making sure that they're being careful because the economy is just sluggish.
Yes, the signals in the economy continue, you know, kind of remaining stagnant.
Right.
And still a lot of uncertainty in the political environment as well.
Right.
As you look at, you know, what's happening in Washington and what are they going to come to with a lot of these issues that are going on around the fiscal cliff and
right.
taxation going forward and that kind of thing. So a lot of businesses, even if, I mean, they've got the cash to expand and grow right now, they're just not going to do it because they don't feel that sense of certainty
right.
that they want to go out and spend that money that they've got on the books. It looks nice just sitting there in the cash column.
That's right. And I'm going to use that to plug one of our shows here on Business Radio X, our Results Matter show, which is on Tuesdays at 10 a.m., hosted by none other than Elizabeth Gordon.
Great.
Has several episodes that you can listen to the podcast talking about the fiscal cliff and also even yesterday's show where we sort of were talking about the new normal. And I think that's why some of these things are happening, because it is the new normal. It's not, you know, we're not in a high growth phase. We're just not. And we don't really foresee that coming anytime soon.
Right.
So, you know.
It's kind of a weird state for America because, you know, we like to be like big, bold, brash, growing, expanding, entrepreneurial, aggressive.
Yeah. Now, you know.
Like, that's like I know I'm American just, bravado.
Exactly. Like, that's our way. And it's funny because, you know, I'm not a, I'm just the color commentary here, Elizabeth. I'm just the sidekick, the funny one, but I'm not a smarty pants MBA like you. But I always wonder about that because, you know, when you're investing in the stock market, and I've tried a little bit, but I mean, for me, I might as well play the lottery because I really don't know what I'm doing. But I've always wondered about the constant need for growth. You know, in the old days, you know, in the 1950s, I use that as like a pie in the sky time frame in my mind, you know, where we all just aspire to a white picket fence and a nice little house in the suburbs,
right,
you know,
exactly.
2.5 kids and a dog. But I think the idea back then was not that you would build these businesses that would create wealth for other people in terms of stock, right? So I'm going to open the Ace Hardware store in my town and it's going to be what it is. It's not going to constantly be growing. It's going to be what it is. I'm going to have a certain amount of inventory, which I'm going to sell, and it's going to bring in a certain amount of revenue, and that revenue is going to support my family.
Right.
But then we got into this mode, you know, and I think it got really bad in the 80s, but then we got into this mode of constant growth.
Excess and growth. Right. I mean, the market expectations right now, you just can't go to a group of analysts on the street and say, yeah, we don't think our company's going to grow much the next year. I mean, you just can't do
right.
it. So you've got to find growth from somewhere. You've got to, whether it's becoming more efficient or closing offices or opening new offices. But right, companies are just constantly trying to feed that monster.
Right. And as a non-expert, as a non-MBA, as a non-business genius, I just think about it in a way as a balloon, and that you blow it up and you blow it up and you blow it up. But at some point, it's got to burst because
right.
you can only grow so much. Like Coke, let's take Coke as an example. You want to sell more Coke, more Coke, more Coke to more corners of the globe, you know, more flavors, more. But there's only so many people and they can only drink so much soda.
Share of belly is what we call it in business school.
And
yes, ultimately, the world only has so much share of belly.
Yeah. And so at some point.
So much belly.
Yeah. Right. And so, right. At some point, like, doesn't that have don't. And I think that's to some extent where we are right
limits.
Now. There's a leveling off of things. You know, you can't grow past a certain point. It doesn't make sense. You know, I know when I have been in business for myself on multiple occasions, I didn't really care about that. I just wanted to make enough money to live comfortably and enjoy my life. And I think that's also, I don't know why I'm so philosophical today, but I think that's also kind of what the millennials are wanting out of life. They don't want to more, 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 more. They want to get to a certain level where they can have a lifestyle that they enjoy. And they want to give back, but it's not like when I was growing up and coming up in college in the 80s where it was all about more, 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 more. It was
right.
about the penthouse apartment. It was about the CEO job. It was about the biggest possible house, you know, the McMansion. Now, I don't think that's what people are after as much.
Absolutely. Societal values seem to be changing.
Absolutely.
Especially in this country. But yeah, I think the youth across the world really is, it's a reflection of the excess
yeah.
of the days.
And
the
I think
past.
A lot of those kids watched their parents going after all that and realized that they were not happy.
Right.
Like they were still fighting. They were still getting divorced. I mean, they were still, you know what I mean? So they had all this great stuff.
I think these days people have a more holistic perception of what wealth really is.
Yes.
And that it's not just about money and a stock portfolio.
Yes.
And a house and those types of things, or the trappings of success, right? The fancy car and the nice clothes and all of that. I mean, your health plays into the equation enormously. Your time and the amount of freedom that you have with your time, your ability to, your freedom of place. You know, are you able to go to where you want to be?
Right.
All of those things really play into the larger picture of what I think you're saying. Young people today, when they think about being wealthy, I mean, yeah, we all want to be wealthy, but what does that really mean?
Right.
And there's a lot more to it than just bank.
Well, I think James actually said it on the flip side, you know, looking at the lower income level, saying, you know, you're not really poor.
If you have love in your family, right.
You're not poor. You might be broke, but you're not poor. And I think the same thing can be said when you're looking at the higher income. You might be wealthy, but you're not rich. You know,
right,
if you have a crappy lifestyle,
yeah,
you know, you're not, your life is not rich if you're missing those elements. If all you have is money, meh.
You need a Christmas Carol moment.
I know. Right. But I think it's really true. And I think, you know, to some extent we didn't plan to have our economy this way. Nobody said let's stagnate our economy. But I think it is actually in a way, in part because of the way people's attitudes are, and in a way helping people to come to those attitudes.
Right. I mean, ultimately, I think it's a good thing. Right. People are getting back more in touch with what's really important.
Right. Well, I know for myself, having, you know, changed careers multiple times, and I would much rather be doing something that I love to do. And I would much rather be living in a neighborhood I want to live in because it's walkable, than have the bigger, fancier house or have the title of a particular job. You know, so I certainly have learned that. It's taken me a few years, but whatever, I'm there now. And I hope that my daughter is kind of coming up that same way. And you know, we'll see what happens, and we'll check back in about 10 years, see where we are.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. Like a good plan.
All right. I'm getting off the philosophical soapbox.
In the meantime.
To talk about money some more. So, you know, we keep talking about this Streets of Buckhead, I guess it was called at one time, the development area that sort of just froze.
Well, speaking about
stagnating.
Living in neighborhoods where you like to walk around, Buckhead has been trying and trying and trying to become one of those neighborhoods.
Yeah. And 3 years ago,
having so much retail and so much commercial real estate and just like a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Really struggled with making that vision of live and walk and work.
Yeah,
reality.
I'm not sure if they ever will be able to because it's so the big roads go through there, the highway goes through. It's just difficult to do it in an area that's already been developed. The malls are there. They're set so far back from the road. We'll see.
It would be, right.
But that one little area that's sort of, you know, where the bars used to be that they've torn down and you just see cranes up in the sky not doing anything. Well, there's more now. So, you know, that development was owned at one time by I forget which group actually, but now it's owned by Oliver McMillan.
Right.
And that group has now actually filed their plans to start work again. Their plan's a $151 million plan they filed to restart the work. And I believe that's slated for August of this year. So still a ways off. Or maybe they did restart it in August. I'm not sure. I may be reading this wrong. The bottom line is, and I've been saying this for months now, we should be seeing some activity there because there's a lot going on behind the scenes in terms of permits and filings and requests and
right.
all this stuff. So we're seeing it in the news. We're not seeing it on the streets yet, but keep your eyes peeled.
And I think one of the first phases of the project is new apartments.
Correct. Which is really interesting because, of course, the condo market in Buckhead is, for lack of a better word, sort of trashed. You know, the bottom just fell out of the condo market. And so they're just putting up, and same thing in Midtown. I mean, all around here,
right.
You're seeing a lot of apartment development, but not a lot of condo development.
There's a lot of buildings that still haven't, sold all of their inventory, and buildings that might have been built, you know, 2007, 8 or 9.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I don't know what this, you know, I wish we had a real estate expert in here. Maybe we need to get someone back in to sort of talk about what this is going to do to the condo market. Is it a bad thing for the condo market? Is it a good thing? You know, it's unclear to me, if there's more rental available, what does that do? to the landscape from an investment standpoint. So I'd love to get someone in, if anyone's listening that's a real estate expert and they want to come be on Good Morning Atlanta and school us in what apartments, new apartments in the market does to the condo market, we would love to have you. So call us. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see. And of course, if you are living around there and you are in a house or a condo, you'll be dealing with all the construction noise and traffic and all that for however long, too. Yeah, it's always great. All right. And again, I like to jump around from serious to ridiculous and back. So
that's what makes you so fun,
Dan. I mean, you know, that's what makes me something. I don't know if it's fun. But can we please talk about the egg toss at Hartsfield-Jackson?
This was funny, right?
Yeah. So I guess, what is it? We have this on, I am not a sports fan, you know that, but we have an ongoing, I guess, rivalry with the New Orleans Saints, who were in town for a football game. And before they even got to the, you know, they were just here getting off the plane and getting onto their tour bus, and somebody egged the bus. This requires forethought, people.
Right.
This is not unlike the Facebook guy.
I rarely carry a dozen eggs in my handbag.
I'm going to go as far as saying I never do. So somebody had to think to themselves, I work at the airport. I have access. I am going to see this tour bus and I am going to bring some eggs with me. I mean, I guess they could have borrowed an egg from somewhere in the facility of the airport, like from a restaurant. But I'm thinking, no, I'm thinking they brought the eggs from home. That's what I'm thinking. And can we just say, what is wrong with people? Really? Why was that important to do?
The classiest way to greet the opposing team.
You know, Elizabeth, you and I grew up in a sports town, Philadelphia. And back in the day,
some of those fans.
People did all. When you used to go to a Flyers game, you came home soaked with beer. You just did. That was part of the experience. They were loud. They were, you know, it was Philly.
That is the Philly fan.
Yeah. Not so much in Atlanta. Generally speaking, we're a lot more polite. Apparently, not anymore, because now we're egging people at the airport.
Forget the sweet tea.
Yeah. Forget the Southern hospitality and the Southern charm. No. You come here. We don't like you. We're going to egg you.
We're going to egg you. That's not a good thing.
No.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's not a representative sample of the city.
Now, I want to give a little, before we wrap it up, because we're running out of time here, but before we do, I want to give a little shout out to the Atlanta Business Chronicle, because one would think that they would be a rival of ours. They're not. They're a friend. And
they're the best.
I use their stories. Most of the stories I bring onto the show are sourced from the Atlanta Business Chronicle. So I thank them for all their hard work and giving me fodder for much joy and love on this show. But one of the things I discovered, and I guess I've seen it before, but I didn't really pay attention to it, on the Atlanta Business Chronicle website, is they have this snapshot where they just kind of pull some. If you don't want to read the news and you just want to not sound stupid at the water cooler, do they even have water coolers anymore? But, you know, you're at the break room at your office and you want to sound like you're kind of up on things. You just go to this snapshot on the Business Chronicle and they just give you like some basics. Like, okay, here's Atlanta weather. The forecast for today, calling for a 60% chance of rain and expecting cooler temperatures. Get this, cooler temperatures with highs in the mid 60s. It's December, people.
It's crazy how nice it is.
But then they also give you a few, they call them today's talkers. And this is the part that I really enjoy. And we're just going to read them to you because I love it. A Toys R Us licensee in Sweden has published a Christmas toy catalog that goes gender neutral. Gotta love it. Girls are brandishing toy guns and boys are wielding blow dryers and cuddle dolls.
Nice.
You could not do that in America. The uproar would be outrageous. Go Sweden. That's what I'm saying. This one is ridiculous.
I like that.
Get this. The Travelodge hotel chain, and whoever writes these Today's Talkers should be my best friend, because they pick out the stories that I would totally pick out. The Travelodge hotel chain in the UK is offering free rooms to couples named Mary and Joseph from Christmas Eve until the 12th day of Christmas, which is January 5th. They say the offer is, quote, a way to make up for the hotel industry not having any rooms left on Christmas Eve over 2,000 years ago, unquote.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. That is hilarious. Ridiculous. Hilarious. And again,
I bet if you're Mary and Joseph and you have a little baby, you probably get like free breakfast too.
I bet you do. Especially if you name him Jesus. And can I just say, again, you could not do this in the U.S.
No.
Because the outrage.
Yes, unfortunately.
We have no freaking sense of humor here. Sometimes. It's sad. Then the other story, sort of more serious. United Airlines Dreamliner 787 made an emergency landing, blah, blah. But then this is a little Georgia story. A Georgia woman listed as the oldest person in the world.
Yeah. Did you know, Dana, that the oldest person in the world
lived
living
here.
Right here in Georgia?
I know. She died at 116 years old. Anyway, I just thought that was cool. And I thought that we should give a shout out to the Business Chronicle for their fun snapshot. So again, if you don't have time to get all the news, go check that snapshot out and you will have all the fodder you need for the break room, or you could just listen to our show. We do the same thing. So
there you go. Be the life of your office Christmas party.
It's always worked for me. We are going to be back next week, aren't
we?
We continue to come back week after week.
Yeah,
we're not sure
why. Central Atlanta Progress
That's
coming
right.
in with some more members. Our friends at the World Trade Center Atlanta will also be featured one more time before we
wrap
call
up the
quits
year.
On 2012. So thank you all for tuning in for another great show. I think that does about wrap us up for today. Thanks to our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta, which you can visit at WTCAtlanta.com. And I am Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm still Dana Barrett. And we will see you next week.